Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I honestly don't know the origin of that, but I have been a do what now man for my entire life. And I don't recall my parents saying it.
Has it ever found its way into the bedroom? Do what now?
I can't even put two and two together with that one. I don't know what that even means. But crying out loud. Christ almighty. Let's not go there.
You just found Greg Cody's safe word.
Do what now? What does that have to do with the bedroom?
That's like mom making like crazy requests.
Okay. What? I see what you mean. Yeah, you want me to do what?
Right on.
Right on.
This is the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody.
Pardon it.
Here's your host, Greg Cody.
How do we begin? That's always the issue.
I need ice on my balls.
That'll work. Balling it.
Yeti, tell us about this invasive surgery that you had today.
I got a vasectomy, guys, today.
Ouch.
Snipping it.
Hell yeah. That's what I hear when I hear that.
Really? Wow.
Oh, yeah. Let it fly, my friend.
Okay, why'd you do that, Yeti? Is that a personal question?
I'm 42. My wife is 43. We would like to avoid any accidents. And
gotcha.
Like, we haven't had to wipe a butt in a long time, and it's kind of nice.
Tired of worried about it. Wants to play and not have restrictions. Hell yeah, my man.
All right.
Okay. Up top.
Okay. All right.
Did I make this weird?
No, not at all. I couldn't care less.
So what does that involve? Like, I've never had a vasectomy. Is that outpatient surgery? Is it like a big hospitalization? Like, what does that involve?
Dad, it happened this morning and he's recording this podcast.
That's a good point. Snip, snip. So it's really like, it's simple now, right? You're in and out in 10 minutes.
Just, you know, like, actually, so far, the worst part has been having to shave everything. TMI and an FYI.
Oi!
The funny thing is I wouldn't put it past Yeti to be like, how to figure out the technical aspects of, he's like in a hotel bed right now, but he just has like a background, his microphone, and like, really, he's in the hospital currently, right. But he's just like.
I did wonder if I should record this from laying down in bed, just because like, it just for the funny visual. But no, I asked the doc, I talked to the doc about the show, like, am I going to be okay to sit up and like sit on a chair and do some editing, and got talking about the show. He had never heard of Greg, he had heard of Dan, one of those classic.
What did he have for breakfast?
That, you know, your mother. No.
What was his name, your doctor? Where does he live, so I can send him a hate mail?
Nah, so Greg, yeah, they just take the old scrope.
Is there scissors involved? Are there scissors involved?
I don't know if scissors or a scalpel, but I think it was a scalpel. But small incision, no stitches.
And small incision, poor guy.
Right. All right, show us the scar. No, I'm just kidding. I never want to see it.
There are a couple of tubes that go up from the testes up into other places, and they snip that, tie them off, carterize them, and you're done.
Dotting some T's, crossing some I's.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So really, it was about 20 minutes, and I was done and got to come on home. But had an interesting experience afterwards, if you want me to go into that, with my wife.
Hell yeah.
Not that interesting.
Already?
So my wife has done this thing. She has met celebrities. She's probably a celebrity's best friend, because she meets them and has no idea who they are. Mm-hmm. Completely oblivious.
Good for her.
She went to culinary school out in San Francisco, and there was a pre-release for there was a pre-release for Monsters, Inc. being held at the place at the school she was working at. And she gets the chance to serve Joe Montana. Had no idea. The other chefs are like, do you know who that was? And they're like, they're trying to go up to him to have him sign their chef hats and stuff. And she's just like,
yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Had love no idea that. She was serving Joe Montana. So then today she gets in the van and she was like, there was a guy out there who saw your shoes and he was talking to me about you. I'm wearing these Saucony shoes, like old, like retro style. And And he said, I saw your husband's shoes. Does he do track and field? Like, is he a thrower? Does he do, you know, discus or shot put or javelin or something? And she's like, no, he never has. You know a lot about track, obviously. He says, actually, I won a gold medal in the 200 in the Olympics. And she was like, oh, cool. And just, that's it. It's just, oh, that's really neat. He talked about him and he was talking about his wife. He was there. His wife had an appointment. So they were just talking for a minute. And so she gets to the car and she's telling me this. And I was like, Jane, like, you didn't meet like Michael Johnson or Carl Lewis or something, did you? You know? And she was like, I don't think that's who it was. So like, let me get my phone. I'll get some pictures. I go through and she's like, no, I think he said he won it in the 60s. So I go through the winners of the 60s. Like, oh, wait, hold on. Jane, did you meet Tommy Smith? And I showed the picture. She's like, that's him. I was like, wow. Jane, Tommy Smith, you don't know this? So then I pulled up the picture of him right on the podium raising his fist with John Carlos at the 68 games. And she was like, oh, she had seen that picture once or twice and it stood out to her. But like, yeah, she had no idea. She had a nice, pleasant conversation with Tommy Smith and had no idea who she was.
Okay. In fairness to Jane, yes, you have to know who Joe Montana is.
But I'm with Jane. I've seen the picture, but I didn't know that guy's name. Like,
yeah, I was going
to
say.
That's an obscure person to get mad at your wife about that.
Chris, no, he's not obscure at all. Now, seeing him. Yeah, I wouldn't have recognized him in a crowd. He's like 70 now or something like that. That like I'm not this Tommy Smith historian, but like as soon as I was going through the names and I saw Tommy Smith and I was like, Jane, was this Tommy Smith? I knew exactly, but there was something inside me that said, this is the guy. Like, you need to pay attention to this. And I was like, Jane, was it Tommy Smith? And yeah, sure enough, it was.
On Team Jane.
He's significant from a political historic point of view, but if Tommy Smith walked into my house right now trying to sell me Fuller brushes, I would have no idea who he was. I want to do a quick callback to last week's episode because it was our world famous ode to horror movies. And I remember Christopher just loving it. And at one point, Yeti mentioned that he didn't like gore. And I made the joke, you don't like Frank Gore or Al Gore? Which Gore don't you like? And I neglected to mention the greatest gore of all time, Leslie Gore, the singer from the early 60s. Everybody knows her from It's My Party and all that.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know. She had a very groundbreaking song at the time that was not the least bit poppy or teeny bopper. It was a song called You Don't Know Me or You Don't Own Me. You Don't Own Me. And it was revolutionary. And I read a review of the song from the time. And it said this song was shocking in 1963 for its anti-patriarchal stance, giving the power of one woman to deny the wishes of a man. And that was a time in America where, you know, the women were stay-at-home wives who just cooked dinner for their husbands and everything was very sexist. And her song at the time was revolutionary. So I wanted to give a shout out to Leslie Gore, who I looked, if she was alive, I was actually going to try to reach her, but unfortunately she died in 2015, I think it was. So
what was that? Is that a Don't Tell Me What to Do?
Yes.
And don't. Okay. Yes. I know that song. I had no idea that was the same person who sang It's My Party. Pretty cool.
Yeah. And totally the songs could not be any more different, but, that was sort of cool to remember her for a minute.
You're old.
Greg Cody.
Hell on a horse. What are you talking about?
It's old.
Okay. Sorry, I deserve that.
That should be the start of this episode. That's what this is called. The Greg Cody is old.
I deserve that because even I was very young when that song was popular.
I'm just saying we've had a lot of old topics so far.
Yeah. Who's older, Tommy Smith or the late Leslie Gore? Let's figure that one out. Christopher, I want to have a quick update on our Tony Kornheiser bet because I reached out to his it still hasn't been decided or else I wouldn't be saying this aloud. I reached out to Tony the K's agent. We're trying to get him on the show before the end of the year.
You have to go through his agent?
Not his agent, his producer.
Okay.
Yeah. And right now, you remember the last time Tony couldn't do it because he was moving for like the first time in 30 years?
Dad, he's never doing it. There was
okay,
like,
let's just hear me out.
He's just giving reasons.
Okay. And he's not, they're good reasons though. Boy, they're good reasons. This reason, the latest, is that his daughter's getting married. Congratulations to Tony the K's daughter.
Yeah, probably in February. Seriously. He's not coming on the podcast. Don't be offended. He doesn't do anyone's podcast.
You and I are making a bet.
Okay. We've had a bet.
I know, but we have never come up with what the bet is.
Okay.
Okay.
So like, what's the timeline on this bet?
Okay. The timeline is I want to come up with it soon because it's already November. It's going to be the end of the year. I have like 6 more episodes to try to get them.
Dad, I'll give you as long as you want. We could do another year. You're never getting them.
Okay. Yeti and I came up with the greatest bet in history. and Yeti will explain why.
Wait, tell Chris's first. Tell Chris's idea for the bet.
Christopher, what's your idea for a bet?
I think the bet should be the loser has to sleep outside for a night and document it. Okay. And like,
that's such a ridiculous bet.
It's uncomfortable. I would prefer not to do that myself.
That's what I mean. Like, it's terrible. Like, that's a good bet. That's something that we both genuinely don't want to do.
Okay, that's the kind of thing a 9-year-old does, and, you know, it's spooky, and, you know.
And what are you about to suggest? How old is the person that does that?
Okay, I'm going to suggest that the loser of this bet eats my great toenail.
Oh, God! Just hearing it, I've never heard it out loud. It's always been through text. Like,
okay. Now, Yeti, briefly explain why that is actually plausible, why that would work.
You could not pay me to eat that thing.
Well, how about you win the bet then?
It would be washed first.
It would be washed.
Oh
no! So the idea came from my wife. So about 4 years ago, my wife was working toward getting into dental hygiene school, and she had to take an anatomy course.
Big player in this episode, your wife, by the way. Big player.
What did your wife have for breakfast today?
Nothing. She skipped it.
Okay.
Yeah. So her professor in anatomy is a very odd and peculiar guy. He decided he was doing some thinking, I guess, I don't know, but he realized that, you know, like pork rinds, that, you know, pork skins, okay, that's keratin. It's made up of keratin. That's what allows it to puff up when they put the pork skins in the grease, right, or whatever. Well, he's like, our nails and hair and everything are made of keratin as
deep
well.
Deep frying the nail. Got it. Terrible.
So the idea would be you deep fry the nail because your nails will puff up just like a pork rind.
No.
Perfect. And become edible.
Perfect.
And become edible.
Okay.
He did it with his own toenail.
Great.
Dad, what do you mean great? You're going to lose this bet. I'd rather sleep outside, honestly, than eat that.
Okay. The bet is made.
No.
But we could fry up the Greg Cody toe with Greg Cody, and the loser has to eat it.
Yo, this is easy. If you win, I sleep outside for a night. If I win, you eat the toenail.
Oh, that's a lopsided bet.
Why?
It's ridiculous.
But
okay,
You want to do that more.
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put a poll on Twitter.
No. Dad, there's no way I'm letting the audience decide whether or not I'm eating that or not. I'm
because
telling
you're afraid.
You right now. Yes.
You're afraid.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not going to be that I'm not like Gracelyn. You're like using the Gracelyn technique right now. Like,
that's your child psychology. But
I will say,
you,
Chris, this whole time, you have been saying Tony is never going to show up on this show. Are you a little worried now that he actually might?
No, I know he's not going to, but it's still just not worth it to me.
Okay, so why not make the bet then? If you know he's not going to, why not make the bet?
Because I'm not, like, I could be. I'm not that bullheaded that I, like, I know I could, like, maybe because you've done his show a million times, he'll agree to give you, like, 10 minutes.
Right.
Like, that might happen, and I'm just not eating that nail.
Come on, make the bet.
What would you, like, you'd, why are you rather picking that bet? Why do you think we should do it your, like, you'd rather eat the nail than sleep outside?
You are always, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong here, you are always preaching to me what would be the best video for social media. What would get the audience engaged?
Yeah, sleeping outside's good.
What do you think the audience would like more, watching one of us have to eat my big toenail?
Oh my God.
Or watching a video of us sleeping in our backyard?
I think it's pretty similar. Dad, trust me, someone will end up eating that nail if we make it just your way, because you're gonna lose.
Okay, all right, so I'll do it. We'll do it.
Do you think your dad would actually go through with it if he lost? Do you think he'd actually eat the nail?
I totally would.
Oh,
if you tell me that it's gonna fry like a pork skin. I like pork rinds. I would eat a pork rind. Why wouldn't I eat a toenail that reads like a pork rind?
God. Dad, this is so disgusting.
Okay. It becomes
Dad,
less.
You're just going for the bit of like, it sounds like a funny premise. You're going to have to do this. You're going to gag. It's going to be disgusting.
We have a professional.
It's your nail.
A college professor is endorsing this bet. Isn't that right, Yeti?
Maybe we could get him on and get his recipe.
All right, let's get him on next week. Dr. Right, Covington, so the bet is, we want you on our podcast next week.
So if I lose...
Give me a recipe.
If I lose, I'll sleep outside. If you lose, you eat the nail. Deal.
Okay. That Whoa! Way people are going to be rooting against me because they want the nail. They want the nail eaten. They don't
I'm
want...
I'm not eating the nail. Like, I'm just not. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I guess I could be a team player more, but it's just like... Like, you don't pay me enough. Pay me more. Like, are you going to give me just like a...
Really?
I'll do that if you...
We're going to go there?
I just need like a bonus. Like a little bonus check, a little something like here's right, for
I'll
doing
give you
this.
I'll give you $100.
$100? You better come correct, sir.
Oh, brother. Unbelievable. You... Okay, the bet is half made. The bet is made. The bet is made. And the bet. So we're going to go through with it. And we will keep you updated on Tony the K, because I do expect to hear back with a yay or a nay fairly soon. So I'm glad... We have the bet made before the verdict.
You better not be messing with me. And like, this is like something that's already like.
What if it is a stacked bet?
Yeah,
no, like, what it isn't. I swear to you, I've told you the truth.
What's your way of communication with this producer?
I text back and forth.
So there's a text history here we could read.
Chris, if he had already booked Tony the K, you know your mom would have been like, have him over for dinner. He'd be on today's show if he had already booked him. Dad wouldn't be able to hold that in.
That's probably true. Quick dad joke of the week. What did the paper say to the pencil?
I'm going to write you off.
Something with lead.
What? Right on.
Right.
Right on. Yeah. Yes. Right on. Right on is from the same era as Groovy. Let's bring them both back. How come nobody says right on anymore?
Oh, boy.
Hey, that was a good movie. Right on. What an affirmation that used to be back in the hippie days. Do what now? Christopher was making fun of me earlier for saying, God. Do what now?
I hate this guy. You want to know? Yeah, you asked a few weeks ago, like the things my dad does that annoys me. I was like, driving with him is annoying. Do what now? When you're in a conversation with him, sometimes I'll say something, I guess, low. And his way of saying, what's that? I didn't hear you is do what now? So it's like I'm in the middle of a conversation. I'm like, yeah. So like I'm having dinner later with friends.
Do what now?
And it's like, what? I'm not like, what do you mean? Do what now?
Oh, mom hates it worse than you do.
My grandma would have slapped me. You had to respond to her with like, if you ever said, huh? Oh, you're getting yelled at. You had to say, ma'am. If you didn't understand, you had to say, ma'am.
And what about do what now?
Man, I never said do what? That was not part of my vocabulary.
Oh, wow. See, I thought that was a Southern colloquialism.
It is, but just didn't leak into mine.
Okay. I'm a Do What Man fan. Do What Now fan.
Where'd you get that? Where'd you get Do What Now?
I don't know. I've been saying it my whole life.
Like the Andy Griffith Show or something?
You know what? I honestly don't know the origin of that, but I have been a Do What Now man for my entire life. And I don't recall my parents saying it.
Do you ever, has it ever found its way into the bedroom? Do what now?
I can't even put two and two together with that one. I don't know what that even means. But crying out loud. Christ almighty. Let's not go there.
You just found Greg Cody's safe word.
Do what now? What does that have to do with the bedroom?
That's like mom making like crazy requests.
Okay. Do what now? And I don't hear her? Or
do what now?
I see what you mean. Yeah, you want me to do what?
Right on.
Right on.
You want me to do what?
What now?
Exactly.
That would being used in the proper context. That's
do what now?
And she responds with
that kind of thing. Okay. I want Yeti to settle an argument real quick. Christopher and I were discussing the ridiculous trend called Friendsgiving.
It's not a ridiculous trend.
Yeah, it's sort
I'm
of ridiculous.
Going to one this like this past weekend. I went to one.
Yeah, I'm against those. It's it's an affront to Thanksgiving, is what it is.
See, this is one of those things my dad's just like, hey, I can say these words. I don't actually believe this or actually have any.
It's a bastardized holiday, and so, we don't approve.
The concept of it, the action, carrying it out, I mean, I think we've all done Friendsgiving several times in our lives, especially when we were single. I don't like the naming of it. I'm like, whatever. I'm not going to. Hey, guys, let's have a Friendsgiving. It feels like something exclusively white people do.
Yeah.
I really enjoy getting together with friends and doing a feast. You know, that's fun.
Like, why be anti-joy, Dad?
But like, giving it the name is a little like not me. But the action is fun.
The name implies that the inventor thought that friends and thanks almost rhymed. Okay, and they don't. So Frank,
no, like this sounds like a bad.
If you called it Franksgiving instead of Thanksgiving, that would at least make sense on that one level. Franksgiving.
Why Franks?
Because it rhymes with thanks, and it's the name of somebody who might be a friend. What? I got to explain that to you. Do what now? Okay. So
Flim's gonna love this.
Here's the thing, but here was the argument.
I was just about to say, no, Dad. We've got it. We have the context. Like, what okay. Are you gonna, like,
all right. Here's the problem. You said, what's wrong with Friendsgiving? Here's the thing. You hold Friendsgiving right before the real Thanksgiving. So somebody like me, who is hosting an actual Thanksgiving, takes it as sort of an insult that, you know, coming to my Thanksgiving, you will have just had a turkey and a Thanksgiving meal.
There's Greg again.
Oh, thank
you. Making the holidays about himself. Like okay. He did when we talked on the Levitard show with Halloween.
Right.
Greg Cody has his ways of doing everything. And if anybody is doing anything different, why are you doing that?
Okay, here's what Thanksgiving should be held.
Ebenezer Cody.
And this was... now, when I hosted a couple of... Friendsgivings back in the day.
You
and
did I think we had what?
I think we had two or three in a row.
Wow, look at you. What a hypocrite. What a hypocrite.
First, allow me to explain. This will explain why it's not hypocritical. Because we had Friendsgiving when it was supposed to be, which is in the middle of the year, 6 months after Thanksgiving and 6 months
no
before
one is doing
Thanksgiving,
that.
Which turns out to be late May. You have Thanksgiving in late May.
You're doing like half Christmas or something.
That's your Memorial Day cookout, Greg. That's...
Okay, I'm just saying that if you're going to have a Thanksgiving, honor the guest, honor the chef at the actual Thanksgiving.
Oh, you do correct. It your way, I'll do it my way. Like, what is this?
He's still going to show up at your place.
Why are you so negative? Why do you hate things?
I don't hate things. I'm a lover. Baby.
Do what now?
No, seriously, I'm not a hater. I'm a lover. You know, make love, not war. That's what I said. Make laughs, not war. Make friends, not more.
Dad, can we get to, we need to get to Jimmy Johnson. We're late.
Oh, wow. You know what? We haven't even mentioned him yet? Oh, shoot.
Oh, my God. Dad, it's not a radio show. People saw in the description that he was coming.
I know, but I wish I would have put him up top because I have to tell you. And
do what now?
And Christopher always accuses me of loving every guest that we have on the show, which is not true.
Now I'm visualizing Jimmy Johnson on top of you.
Right on. Someday I'm going to do a Mount Rushmore of our worst guests on this show, and it won't be easy. It won't be tough coming up with five. But Jimmy Johnson, I adored that conversation we had with him. I really did. I think you all are going to as well. Here's Jimmy.
Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, Jimmy.
How are you doing today?
We're good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
You know, it's funny. I was telling Christopher just before you came on that I guaranteed him that you would not be a minute late and that, in fact, you would be ready to go a minute early because that was the mantra as coach, right? If somebody was 5 minutes early for a meeting, they were almost late.
I've always been early for everything.
That's great.
If I'm not 5 minutes or 15 minutes early, then you know that there's a problem.
That's right. Well, you know the saying, the early bird catches the worm, and you're a fisherman, so you got to have plenty of worms, right? Jimmy, I want to get right started early because there's so much to talk about and we don't want to keep you forever. The new book is called Swagger, Super Bowls, Brass Balls, and Footballs, a memoir, and along with Dave Hyde and a great sports columnist for the South Florida Sun Sentinel, a friend of ours for years. First, congratulations on the book. It comes out November 15th. It's on pre-order now, and you and Dave are going to be at the Miami Book Fair November 17th. So congrats for this.
Well, thank you. I was really hesitant about writing the book with Dave, and my attorney, Nick Kristen, he said, hey, you have got to write a book. You know, you're getting up there in years. You got to tell some stories about University of Miami and
right.
The Dallas Cowboys and Survivor and the Miami Dolphins, on and on. And so once I got into it, I really enjoyed, kind of reliving some of the memories and having some conversations with some of the people around the country that were involved. And of course, Dave, I did a great job with it.
Yeah.
Coach, I know it's not on the football field, but where in your life do you have the least amount of swagger?
the least amount of swagger, probably with my wife.
Yep.
I can't swagger around Rondo. Rondo put me in my place.
Good answer, by the way. Good, a smart answer as a married man, I can tell you. Jimmy, I covered your UM years, and I saw that swagger firsthand. I remember a little bit later during the Cowboy years, it was before an NFC championship game against San Francisco, and you pretty much guaranteed a win and challenged the media to put it in 3-inch headlines.
Right.
So that tells us, I mean, you have been consistent as long as I've known you in terms of that kind of attitude. And once I remember Sports Illustrated named your 86 Canes team the most hated team in America, and your 92 Cowboys came in third. And that had to delight you.
Hey, well, it upset me. I think the Detroit Pistons might have been second. But, yeah, Greg, I always took the approach of being upbeat and positive, especially dealing with the individuals that I dealt with. You know, a lot of the guys that I coached were, you know, inner city kids, that hadn't had a lot of direction. One thing that I was very proud of at University of Miami is we improved the graduation rate from like 50% to 88%, you know, by having, you know, mandatory study hall and academic counseling on. And it stayed that way ever since I left. But it was the Pygmalion effect. I wanted to really treat them as winners day one. And, I didn't mind the bravado, and I didn't mind the celebration. You know, I didn't want them to taunt or, get penalties, which, we were not a highly penalized team. But we always took the approach that we're going to kick somebody's rear end,
right?
Rather than a lot of coaches saying, "Oh, they've got a great team. You know, we'll have to play at our best to have a chance." I took the opposite approach.
Yeah. Well, and Michael Irvin famously used to say something to the effect, "We're going to tell you we're going to beat you, then we're going to beat you, and then we're going to remind you we just beat you," or something like that. He was and is the best when it comes to that kind of stuff. Jimmy, I want to start with the UM years, 84 to 88. And you've had a consistent thing in your coaching career where you weren't afraid to replace legends and step into enormous shoes. And at Miami, they had just won a championship. Snellenberger had just left, beloved because he had just won a championship, in you come. Tell us about the Hurricanes years.
Well, that first year was a struggle, as you remember, Greg.
Yep.
First of all, they lost 9 defensive starters, and so we had to rebuild that defense. Now, we still had a good offensive team, but defensively, we had a change. And the problem was, I was hired, late in June, because Howard had left to go to the new league. And so, I got there and I'd never, one of the requirements, I had to retain the entire coaching staff. And I didn't know a single one of them. Little did I know that 3 of them wanted the job. And they were upset that I got the job. And so it was a little bit of tension there, with that crew. But we struggled through that first year. And then after the first year, we were able to put together our staff. And I think after that first year, the last 4 years, we only lost 2 regular season games. And if we'd had instant replay at Notre Dame, we wouldn't have lost that one.
I'll tell you what, that 86 team, I know it was a heartbreaker loss in the title game to Penn State, 14-10, if I recall. But that 86 team, man, you had a bunch of Sunday guys playing on Saturday. I mean, that was the best team I've ever seen.
They were funny. I remember a story. When I was at Oklahoma State, I struggled against Oklahoma. They just had better players. And we took our team up to Norman to play Oklahoma. It must have been about my second year or so. And Jerome Brown was stretching there, and all the Oklahoma players started coming down the ramp to go on the field for warmups. And Jerome says, "Fresh meat, fresh meat." And I looked at Jerome, I said, "Hey, calm down. These guys are pretty good."
That's great.
But that's the attitude our guys had.
swagger all the way. On to the Cowboys years, 89 to 93. Again, you replace a legend in Tom Landry. You inherit a guy named Jerry Jones as the owner. tell us about that wild ride. You went from one wild ride to another one.
Well, you know, in the book, actually, I've reprinted my contract and where I had control of all football operations. But that was Jerry's doing. Jerry said, listen, you know, he said, I'm going to hire you, you know, be the coach. He said, you handle all the football decisions, all the football operations, and I'll handle all the financial operations. He said, you know, I'll handle finance. You'll handle football. We'll go back to back and we'll make sports history.
Mm-hmm.
So my attorney, you know, Nick Kristen, that's the way he wrote up the contract. Well, that worked great until after we won the first Super Bowl. And Jerry said, hey, I want to have some of that fun.
Right, exactly.
Nobody cares how many millions I make.
And you said, no, I don't want to give up my power, right?
Yeah, well, we redid the contract three different times. And every time he wanted to take that out of the contract, I said, no, that's not negotiable.
Yeah.
I said, you know, in order for us to operate the way we've been operating, you know, I wanted to be able to handle the draft and the trades and the football operations. But that also caused a conflict, Craig.
Yeah, I can imagine. And the book is called Swagger, and we're just teasing it here. There's so much in here that that we're going to allude to, but not really dive into like you'll see when you read the book.
How do you assess Jerry Jones now as a talent evaluator?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, Will McClay actually handles the personnel, and he's a very talented individual. And in fact, I'm surprised that he hadn't been hired as a general manager. I know Jerry's paying him extremely well, but they are a talented team. Now, one thing about the talent, you know, the Cowboys have so much visibility that sometimes I think maybe their talent is maybe trumped up a little bit more than what it should be. But without question, they've got a talented team.
Jimmy, so much is made of your relationship with Jerry Jones. It's almost like a mythical thing. Like what if you and Jerry today are at the same event, the same gala event? Is it a situation where you're friendly and you go up to each other, or do you avoid each other?
It is a strange relationship. In fact, Greg, I say in the book, I said, you know, people really don't understand our relationship. In fact, I don't understand our relationship. So I don't know. It just depends on what day it is and what the event.
Right.
But normally when we see each other, we hug each other and we have a bunch of laughs.
Now, after a couple of years out of coaching, post-Cowboys, you turn up with the Miami Dolphins in 1996 and 99 through 99. And again, you replace a legend in Don Shula. Not only that, but you inherit an aging and obviously aging Dan Marino.
One that Greg Cody tried to trade in a column.
Well, I did, and I still don't think I'm entirely wrong in that column because I don't want to go into it. They could have gotten a lot for him at the time, but right. Whatever. What were the Dolphin years like, especially the beginning? Because, you know, you were seen by some as the guy chasing Don Shula out of town.
Well, actually, you know, that all happened before I ever even had any contact with the Dolphins. In fact, Nick Bonacani called and said, hey, you know, Don Shula is going to retire. I said, really? You know, I had no clue about it. And then, you know, after he left, I had a call. I'd never had a conversation with Wayne Huizing. I never talked to him, didn't know him. And Eddie Jones called, went through my attorney and said, hey, we'd like to talk to you, you know, because there's an opening here. And you know, I had reservations because I really enjoyed Fox. But, you know, and I had opportunities to go to Philadelphia and really Tampa had really gone strong trying to get me to go to Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they said, hey, we got salary cap problems. We're $5 million over the cap and we've got five players that are up for new contracts and it'll be difficult to keep any of them. But we've got Dan Marino. And the main thing, you know, not only Dan, but I wanted to live in South Florida. I wanted to live down here. And so I did take the job. You know, I would have loved to have coached Dan when he was healthy, but, you know, he was hurt the entire time I was there. He had some type of injury every year that I was there. But we went to the playoffs three straight years, won a couple of playoff games. I was disappointed we didn't win a Super Bowl. But, you know, we were competitive and we won games. But again, we didn't win a Super Bowl. So it was a disappointment.
Well, I have to remind people who forget that two of the guys you recruited were named Jason Taylor and Zach Thomas. So you did okay on your Miami years in my remembrance.
Well, we actually led the NFL in defense. And of course, Jason and Zach and Sam Madison and Patrick Surtain, you know, they were a big part of us leading the NFL in defense.
Yeah, and Daryl Gardner, I remember. Monster he was in the middle. Talk about your relationship with Shula, and I don't even know if relationship is the right word. You must know that he didn't particularly like you. I mean, he once referred, I think, to Dave and to me separately. He used to kid that Jimmy Who when your name would come up.
Right.
I mean,
I didn't understand that because I was always, you know, positive and upbeat, with Coach Shula. And every time I was around him, you know, I visited with him. One time, he didn't like me, losing some of those players that we did the first year, but we didn't have any money under the cap to do it because, you know, his last year, he really tried to make a run at it and really signed big contracts to Edmund and Green and some of those guys. And so we couldn't deal with anything because we were over the cap.
Yeah. I want to move on from football for a minute because there's an element of your life and of the book Swagger where you go off the field and get pretty personal about some of the trials and tribulations in your life. And I think so many families across America have gone through it or are going through it with kids. And, you have two sons, Brent and Chad, and Chad went through his tough time. And I remember I talked to Chad last time we spoke on this podcast. It was related to your Pro Football Hall of Fame induction. And at the time I talked to Chad, and I talked to you about him, and you said, "I'm more proud of what Chad accomplished than anything I ever did." And that was overcoming years of addiction, and he's staying clean now. And can you just talk about that? Because a lot of people can relate to that.
Well, I think alcoholism, addiction, it takes a bigger toll on the families than what people realize. I take some responsibility on that because I wasn't there for them when they were growing up. I was trying to win football games. And Chad struggled with it for many years and went through rehab, et cetera. And, I said in the book, the biggest victory in my life is when Chad got sober. And not only did he get sober, but he started Tranquil Shores. He started, with just a halfway house and a rehab center. He got everything certified. He retained doctors and counselors and I speak at his client reunion about every year. And I would sit in the audience and people would get up at the podium, mothers and daddies, and they would say, "Chad, thanks for saving my son's life." Or one woman got up and said, "Chad, you picked up my daughter at 3:00 in the morning.
Wow.
Drove her around for 4 hours and then took her to detox. Thanks for saving her life." I got up when it's my turn to talk. I said, "Listen, I won national championships as a player, national championship undefeated team as a coach, couple of Super Bowls, but nothing that I've ever done can compare with what you people are doing here at Tranquil Shores." I'm very, very proud of him.
Yeah, and that had to give you, you went through a large chunk of your life where it's all about the football and there's nothing more important than Saturday or Sunday. And this is a whole different perspective. That had to be pretty profound.
Yeah, when he was struggling, Greg, I would lay in bed and I would bawl. And I'd say, just tell Rhonda, I'll give somebody $1 million if they can just help him get back on track. And to the point that I didn't know what to do. One person told me, said, "Hey, you can't give up on him. When you think that it's at the very end, try one more time. And then when he's at the end again, try one more time. You just can't give up." And I'm just so proud of what he's been able to accomplish since he's become sober.
That's terrific. And likewise, Jimmy, when your mom passed away, I think that was another experience for you where it really put into perspective and maybe some guilt feelings there. Hey, I wasn't there as much as I should have been because I had games. What did your mom's passing mean in your life and in your career?
Well, that's when I was at the Dolphins. And it was before one of our late season games, before the playoffs. And Wayne Huizinga, who was a fantastic owner, and a fantastic person, him and Marty were just wonderful people. Wayne says, "Hey, you can use my plane to fly down to your mother's funeral." And I flew down and I couldn't look at her in the casket. And it just hit me, my sons were there. I said, you know, here I've been chasing championships in football all these years, and I've missed out on so much. I've missed out on my family. And that's then and there is when I decided to retire, you know, when the time came.
Wow. And a lot of people, I think, maybe not people who know you well or have just heard what you said, but I think a lot of people were surprised you never came back because there had to be the offers. And you were still a young man when you retired. Right. There had to be many, many chances to go back, probably over a 10-year period. Tell us about that a little bit, if you can.
Well, you know, I had offers, you know, come back and coach, and then I had offers to be a general manager. I had offers to be a consultant. one team, you know, called, and I knew the owner very well. I knew the general manager very well. They said, you know, can you just, you know, run our draft for us? And just draft the players, right. Draft the talent.
Wow.
And I said, you know, I said, that's not going to work. I said, first of all, it'd take me 3 months to get schooled up on the draft and evaluate the talent.
Right.
Number two, if I draft them, your coaches and your general manager is not going to like it. You can say, well, Jimmy likes this guy. I didn't like him, you know. And so, you know, you got to be, everybody's going to be on the same page. And then the last thing I said is, you don't have enough money to pay me to come up there for 3 months.
Good answer. Good answer. And I should remind people, your job as a Fox NFL Sunday studio analyst has been a career in and of itself and a super successful one. And that continues.
Who's the player that you coached in your career? It could be at Miami, Dallas, the Dolphins, that you just didn't like, you have regrets. You wanted more out of them. Like maybe it's on you. Maybe it was on the team. You could have done more with this player.
Well, I don't have any like regrets on any one player that I could have done more. I would have loved to coach Dan Marino when he was healthy. Dan, when he was healthy, man, he was as good as there was. But
yeah,
he had the Achilles injury. He had the shoulder injury. He had the bad knees. In fact, I think he's had both knees replaced. I told him,
when I
saw him at the Hall of Fame, I said, I wish you'd had those knees replaced before I got there. I would have loved to coach Dan when he was healthy.
His last season, the two knee braces he wore were so bulky. He looked like something out of a science fiction movie or whatever.
Jimmy, are there any big trades in your career that you almost made? Like trades that would have made huge news that we almost made, you don't know this, but we almost traded for this guy.
Oh no. I mean, yeah. See, I made 51 trades in 5 years. I was in Dallas. People back then, there was no fantasy football. And so there really wasn't a lot of trading. You know, like the New York Giants during that 5 years made one trade and that was with me. And so,
yeah.
So those 51s that we actually did trade, there was probably 1,000 that I had conversations about.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I could pick one.
What's the trade you had to work hardest for? You had to get on the phone 20 times with this GM and he just like, you had to give a little extra. Like, what's the trade that you had to work the hardest for?
Well, you know, of course I had everybody on speed dial. And so I wanted to trade down in the first round 1 year in Dallas. And so I called Joe Gibbs. He was at, with Washington. I said, Joe, I said, you know, I've got a trade. I had my value chart that I developed when I was there. So I knew what the relative values were. I said, I'll trade this and this, you know, trade down, swap picks in the first round. So Joe, you know, talked about it a little bit and he said, okay, you know, we're fine. And so, you know, we're going and I'm talking to my man in New York. I said, hey, is Washington got the ticket up to the desk? You know, we got to make this trade. You know, clock's running out. And he said, there's no movement at Washington. And I said, hey, you know, we're going to run out of time. You know, and it's getting down to the last 30 seconds. I got Joe back on the phone. I said, Joe, I said, hey, what about the trade? You know, get the ticket up to the desk. Jimmy, I'm sorry. I'll have to talk to you about it later. The old man won't let me trade with you.
Oh, wow. The old man. You always used to say that you took a loss, that a loss brought you down more than a win ever lifted you up.
Yeah, I expected to win every single week. And so when we won, it wasn't any big deal because I expected to win.
Is it the same on the boat? Like you loss, if you don't catch anything on the boat, that's harder than a good catch.
If I'm on the boat, I'm going to have me about 5 Heineken lights. And so
there you go.
There you go. the green lizards are with you. Jimmy, we're gonna wrap up with my great thanks. But on the way out, I do want to ask you about that that pilgrimage down to your place in Isla Mirada from coaches and general managers trying to inherit a little bit of your wisdom. And Rhonda's right, by the way. You need to start getting rich on that by charging a consultant fee.
Who's the coach that wanted to come down there? And you're like, look, man, you got to have a couple more years of experience. You're not ready to come down here yet.
Oh, yeah. I usually open it up to whoever. But, you know, if it's somebody that I don't know very well or, you know, I'm not really wanting to spend a lot of time with, I'll just meet him over at Jimmy Johnson's Big Chill. If it's, you know, if it's Belichick, he's going to stay in the guest house. You know?
Sure.
Yeah. So it just depends.
Yeah. Right. Christopher, you had a ridiculous lunch question for Jimmy.
Well, no, I just, in the Keys, what's the ideal Jimmy Johnson lunch in the Keys? Are we talking like a blackened, like a mahi sandwich? What are we talking?
Oh, no, I am renowned for wherever I go, I've got to check out the nachos. And Jimmy Johnson's nachos at the Big Chill, that's the number one.
There you go. Okay. Jimmy, the book is called Super Bowls Swagger, Super Bowls, Brass Balls, and Footballs, a Memoir. Highly recommend it. It's out November 15th. You can pre-order it now. If you're in the area at all, check out Jimmy and Dave Hyde at the Miami Book Fair on November 17th. Jimmy, I've known you a long time. I've admired you a long time. I wish you all the success in the world with this new book, and thanks so much for being on with us.
All right, Greg. Enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Jimmy.
All right. Bye-bye.
As a man who is perpetually insincere in interviews, you said an honor to talk to Jimmy Johnson. This one I actually believe. When you said it to Dick Stockton, that's when I knew that you'd say it to anybody. But I believe you actually do respect and admire Jimmy Johnson.
Okay. Well, I've known Jimmy since the 80s, but don't disrespect Dick Stockton.
No, we'll I just, you, no, no, no. I'm not disrespecting his career. I'm disrespecting how much you claim to have followed his career.
Okay. That's probably fair. That's probably fair.
You made it seem like you watch every Dick Stockton game because you're just a big Dick Stockton guy.
Yeah, you're right.
No, you are a big Dick guy. Yeah. Like Uncle Dick's your brother. Like you are a big, are a big Dick guy.
Okay. All right. Where are we at?
Did I make this weird? Anyways, football happened today.
You did a little bit.
Did you see this crazy finish? This Brady just Brady'd again.
No, I didn't.
You know how last week the theme was, we talked to Mina about it, about these quarterbacks, Brady and Rodgers, like which one of them is done, which one of them can bounce back. And I think people all got it right that Brady's not done yet, especially in that shitty division. But there's just something wrong with Rodgers when he can't win in Detroit. I mean, that
amazing.
Is just, that's home cooking for him.
I mean, that's a bad defense.
Yeah.
Detroit is a almost a historically bad defense.
I could have played quarterback against the Lions last week when the Dolphins were there. Remember how wide open those guys were? Like, I could have been their quarterback, and Rodgers couldn't do anything against them.
It's amazing. Like, granted, I mean, I get it, Roger. Rodgers. We get it. I mean, you've lost a lot of receivers. They traded your main guy. You know, they tried at the trade deadline to get you a couple of guys. They couldn't do it. Singing the blues. We get it. But you have to beat Detroit.
Yeah.
You have to score more than whatever, 9 points against Detroit.
And the Dolphins. And the Dolphins. How good is it to just live in this space of we're one of those good offenses?
I'll tell you what. They can win a shootout now.
Yeah.
That's one of the things we found out is that, you know, they can outscore their own defensive lapses.
They can
score in the 30s. I mean,
they can outscore defensive lapses and they can outscore coaching lapses. Because as good as Mike McDaniel is, he has shown a few things with timeouts and he's shown some rawness in the game management.
Right.
Of like in the first half, there was 12 seconds left. They kicked the field goal on fourth down. Like they could have just let the clock run down and ended the half on the field goal. But yet they kicked the field goal with 12 seconds left, and then they had to kick off. And it was just like a weird thing where the other team didn't have to get the ball back. And you know what I mean? So he just has done some weird things. But I was texting with Chris Whittingham about this, that with the offense that he's
brought. Drop that name. Wow.
With the offense that Mike McDaniel has brought.
Right.
he could sleep with my wife and I don't care. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he could call a timeout after an incomplete pass and I don't care, as long as Tyreek Hill keeps doing what he's doing.
Okay.
I don't care what this guy does at like little moments. I love him.
No, I do too. The problem with that, what you just said, is that you have invited me to imagine Mike McDaniel in bed with my daughter-in-law, which I really didn't want to go there. No, but you brought that.
That is where him and I, because him and I went down a path of just texting each other probably 15 things of like, he could call a timeout here. He could play nine guys on defense. Like, we were just jokingly texting each other things that he could do, and we'd still love him because of how good this offense is.
Right.
And it ended about 15 things deep when I said that to him. And I was like, all right, maybe I took it too far.
Okay. And you know what else we saw in this game is that Jeff Wilson is going to be really good. And he made a, you know, Bradley Chubb was hardly mentioned on the telecast. The only time you saw him mentioned.
He had a few pressures, but didn't really get to him.
Yeah, he did. And he missed a sack toward the very end there. But
what are we going to like assess Bradley Chubb right there off that one game? Like, no.
I'm just saying he had sort of a quiet game, whereas Jeffrey Wilson, I thought, advertise himself like, whoa, I'm here.
Jeffrey Wilson.
Well, whatever, Jeff Wilson. I don't know. Jeff Wilson Jr. He goes by Junior. Why do all these athletes go by something Junior? Drop the Junior.
Wow, you are so full of shit. You're such a family guy. Like, if I was a junior and I didn't put, like, Cody, like, you would be so, like, God, you're like, all right, I'm just...
Okay, but here's the difference.
Dad, you're not upset. No. Oh, my God. You're not upset about someone having a junior on their jersey.
Hear me out. Okay, let's say you're Greg Cody Jr. instead of Chris Cody, okay?
It's not because people are misunderstanding. It's not like people think, oh, wait, is that Greg Cody? No, it's because you grew up as a junior and a senior. Like, you take pride in that junior name. And, like, it's part of your name.
All right, but I'm still in the market. Like, you and I are still, like, sort of in the same media realm. We're both working. Like, we're on the same damn podcast together. Whereas Jeff Wilson's dad is not in the NFL. Like, nobody is confusing the two of those.
Dad, your show's called The Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody.
I know. I've offered to call it The Greg Cody Show with Chris Cody, and you don't want to do it.
Because that's not funny.
Okay. I didn't say it was funny. I want to do it as an honorarium.
All right. Good episode.
Listen, mention real quickly your thoughts on the UM game, because I was there. They got their ass kicked.
I couldn't have been paying attention any less. I was at a Friendsgiving dressed up as Alan Grant from Jurassic Park.
How'd that go?
It was amazing. The kids were at the grandparents' house. Thanks for that.
Dang, and we enjoyed it.
And yeah, with the time change was nice. So even when I had to be at your house at 8 a.m., it really was 9 a.m. A nice little trick. And when she was up with you at 6:30 a.m., it was really 7:30.
Yeah, right. No, it was beautiful. We enjoyed it. Let me just say this about UM. They suck right now. It's been a really, really disappointing season for Mario Cristobal. Any Canes fan giving up on Mario and going, $80 million wasted money. We want Al Golden. Are you kidding me? Give him more than 9 games to get this thing turned around. He's had some great recruiting prizes.
Are kids leaving?
I mean, I'm sure there's going to be, you know, nowadays the portal is flowing. The transfer portal is flowing, but he's made some good hits in recruiting.
Are people firing him? I feel like everyone's got a nice head on their shoulders here. Like, you know, it's a bad first year, obviously. But, you know, like, yeah, like, obviously, like, are people calling for his heads already? Calling for his head already?
But kiddingly, in hyperbolic sense, they are. I mean, you know, Kane's Twitter was blowing up the other night. You know, you don't, and in fairness, you don't lose 48-3 or whatever it was. I mean, that was an embarrassment. But Mario's going to be fine. As Jimmy Johnson told us in this episode.
Oh, that was did that question even survive? I don't even know.
I hope it did.
Because that was, I mean, that is just like, he Mario's one of the, like, they invited him to the program.
Yeah.
Like, in all, like, fairness to Jimmy Johnson, he's never going to say anything in that spot other than positive things.
I know, but I hope it was left in the podcast. And if it wasn't, you're fired.
All right.
Okay.
Well, if it wasn't, then they just got to know what he said and they didn't even have to hear it. So I might just cut it out and then they'll learn it here.
That's a good point.
Save a little time.
Jimmy Johnson endorses and supports Mario Cristobal. Good night, everybody. We love you all.
Wow. You always say goodnight, everybody, when most, like, the metrics say that most people listen to this early in the morning. So you should say, have a good day, everyone.
You know what? Have a good day, everyone. Appreciate you. Please appreciate me as much as I appreciate you. And then we'll be even.
Dad, your wife's out of town for a trial. So you're a man. You're a man alone in the house. Like,
I know. That's
I imagine
scary.
You having, like, you know, Bruce Springsteen playing loudly throughout the house.
I'm telling you what, I'm going to try to figure out how to turn the Sunday Night Football game on my TV, because I normally don't do that. I don't know what channel it's on. What is that, Prime Video? I don't know. Do I even get that?
It's either on that? It's either on 6 or channel 432.
6 or 432.
Yeah.
All right, I'm writing that down. 6 or 432.
Actually, if you go out, your TV has like a setting, or if you go out to your TV, if it's off, just be like, hello, hello, TV, channel 6, whoo, whoo, and it'll just do it.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Practice. Do it.
Okay. Practice. Channel 6, whoo, whoo. No? You know what I have to say to you?
Babe.